This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And coming up on the program this week, we have a question and answer segment from the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention's education session, in which Betsy Steiner and Kathy Connolly talk about creating a winning partnership with your horse. But first, Laura Spreiser talks to us about being a dressage pro and a triathlon amateur, which you can read more about in an article in the April issue of USDF Connections magazine. I began by asking Laura how she got into triathlon.
I got into triathlon because I had gotten into running and had gotten myself hurt. And I had strained my Achilles tendons. I couldn't run, but I still needed to get some exercise. And so I found myself swimming at my local pool. And I swam as a kid, and I was always a pretty handy swimmer. And I chatted with the other swimmers at the pool, like you do, and a few of them were triathletes. I said, huh, triathlon. I had already run. I obviously swim. I know how to ride a bicycle. I can do that. And it turns out I could do that because there are lots of different levels at which one can play when one is in triathlon. I compete at the very lowest level, which is the sprint length distance that is usually between a quarter and a half mile swim, a 15 to 20 mile bike, and a 5K run. Distances go as high as Ironmans, which are obviously tremendous physical activities.
Well, that in itself is a very demanding sport. It's rather like three-day eventing. You've got the three disciplines, as you explained. So fitting that into your regular schedule must be quite a challenge. How much training do you do each day then, Lauren?
I think it's important to remember as I talk about my journey into triathlon that I am, first of all, not very good at it. I am definitely an amateur. This is not my day job. You know, if it's a really good week, I train 4 days a week. And for the level at which I'm interested in participating, that's enough. Fortunately, I'm a pretty okay athlete. Riding certainly helps keep me, you know, in a base level of fitness. I try and hit the pool at least one day a week, and it's rarely more than that unless it's the summertime. I live in Northern Virginia where it's stupid hot all summer, and so sometimes I'll swim instead of running, in place of running, when it's really, really hot. I usually run 2 to 3 days a week, and I bike again 1 to 2 days a week. If I get 4 days in, it's a really good week.
So you must be supremely fit then. How has it helped you with your riding and the core strengths that you need for dressage?
You know, I'm such a better rider than I am a triathlete that I really think it's the other way around, that the riding has helped my triathlon. Because I'm a rider, I'm also very focused on my flexibility. Because it's easy to get locked up and stuck when all you do is get pounded around on horses all day. So I'm already a pretty avid yoga and Pilates kind of person. And the combination of flexibility and core strength have served me well as a runner and a swimmer and a biker. I do have to be very careful when I run a lot as I start increasing my distances that I don't get too tight in my hamstrings. Then I'll feel it when I ride. So it's important to make sure that I balance my triathlon activities and stretching and yoga and keeping my flexibility up. But I really think most of what I've gotten out of it mental. I think it's made me a more focused competitor. There's this really cool place your brain goes when you're out on a long run or out on a long bike where the world kind of falls away. And that's a very similar moment to the nice moments with my horses and with my clients' horses, when the horse and I are one mind, just like when my bike and I are one mind, or my running feet are, and I are one mind.
This would have given you a new perspective on learning another sport and obviously help you as you coach people coming into the sport of dressage for the first time later in life. But talk about how you chose the coaches that you have now for triathlete and how that has shifted your perspective of learning a sport.
You know, it's been so interesting because I, like a lot of professional riders, and some amateur riders too, have been riding since I was a child. I started riding dressage when I was 10 years old. And when you're a kid, you don't think about, oh, God, I've missed that tiny nuance and my half of life is over. You know, you're focused on running around and getting dirty and kissing your pony on the nose and having a good time. By the time I got neurotic, like an adult, I had already gotten pretty competent at the riding, so I hadn't really had to struggle like a beginner as an adult until I joined my bike group. I don't really have a coach per se, but I joined a group that leaves from my town every Monday night that has a wide range of experience amongst its members, including some very experienced athletes who help me out. And man, the way that these guys think and the way that they talk, they're nice guys, they're wonderful guys, they're very approachable guys. But I imagine that the way I feel talking to them is probably like what my students feel like talking to me when I'm saying about, oh, I missed this tiny, you know, moment in the 170s and blah, blah, blah. So that has made me really stop and think about how I can make things more approachable, more basic. And it gives me a lot of empathy for how they learn as well, that when you don't even know enough to know what questions to be asking, it's your coach's job, it's your trainer's job to anticipate that and to have that always in the back of that coach's mind when he or she is taking that beginner student through, you know, the beginning of their journey.
So obviously the vocabulary, that helps too, but also the mindset, you know, and the techniques. Presumably you have developed your own technique for coaching, but have you learnt things in terms of coaching styles from other sports and people's approach to learning that sport that has helped you? Has it shifted anything in terms of your technique and how you communicate with the new people coming into the sport, new riders?
I don't think anybody can be patient enough when it comes to working with beginners to just always bear in mind that they are coming from a place of being a completely blank slate. I make sure that I use all the different learning styles when I'm teaching beginners. You know, some people are really visual learners and some people are really physical learners. And some people need to be able to write about what they've learned. Some people can learn by listening. Some people can learn by reading. And being able to incorporate all of those for any student, but especially for someone who's just beginning, to really maximize the amount they retain. I subscribed to Triathlon magazine when I first started, but I didn't find it very helpful because that's just not how I learn well. I learn very well through writing about things. I learn very well by doing things. And so that is how I, you know, I learned by going out and riding my bike and swimming, and also about by journaling a little bit about my experience. Writing this article was actually really helpful in terms of making me think about, okay, you know, what could I be doing better on my bike? What could I be bringing from the horse world into my triathlon? So when I work with the beginner students, I think triathlon has made me think more about different learning styles and the different tools I can offer them.
So what would you say to people then going into dressage that maybe have been quite proficient in other sports?
Bring all of the good that you have from your other sports into the new sport. You know, some of my favorite students are serious athletes or serious high performance something. Maybe they're high performance bankers or they're up there in leadership or politics. You know, the dedication and drive that it takes you to succeed at the State Department. I'm outside Washington, D.C. We have lots of government employees amongst our students. That same chutzpah that gets those guys up in the morning to do their job is also a really good skill to bring into the riding. You know, that they are totally cool with practicing the track canter transition 1,000 times in ways that, you know, people who don't work in that field or people who've never done an Ironman might not be comfortable with.
So obviously it's something that you would recommend because one sport has helped the other. You've learned from it. It's brought you different skills and also helped you with your riding techniques as well as, you know, coaching techniques. But does that encourage you to try other sports now, Lauren? I don't know how you fit it all in with doing a three discipline.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's room in my life for another sport, but the other thing that's been so fun about getting into triathlon is that it's a hobby for me. And so being able to go and do something that has absolutely nothing to do with my job is really fun and really fulfilling. And it's met, I've gotten to meet lots of different kinds of people who want to talk about stuff other than horses, which is just mind-blowing. That there is a world outside of horses. Isn't it crazy?
Well, obviously, it's great to have that kind of worldly perspective because we can take things from different sports and disciplines and lifestyles and professions and so on, and it just adds to your toolkit, doesn't it?
Absolutely, for sure.
All right, so what next for you then, Lauren? You're heading home for the summer, back to Northern Virginia. What does your schedule look like with your horses?
I have a big group of horses that range from some very young horses to my Grand Prix horse, Alegria, who I'm hoping to come CDIs this fall. I have a couple of wonderful developing small tour horses, two in particular that I'm aiming for the developing horse, Prix St. George horses, and then an armada of babies, and a whole bunch of both junior and adult amateur clients. We've got it going on. We are busy at my house all summer. But it's great. It's fun.
And any triathlon competitions coming up?
I have one tentatively on my schedule for June. There's a lot going on for shows, and I have a couple of riders trying for the NHAYRC, so their schedule kind of dictates my life most of the spring, but hopefully June.
But in triathlon, will you be competing anywhere in triathlon?
I participate in a lot of triathlons put on by a group in Richmond, Virginia, which is a really nice beginner-friendly group, and so plus when I train at home in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, then I can go to the flatlands of Richmond and I feel like a ninja. So there's my plan.
All right. Obviously a busy summer ahead for you. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program this week.
Thank you.
And now we hear from Kathy Connolly and Betsy Steiner with the concluding segment taken from the question and answer session at the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, entitled Creating a Winning Partnership with Your Horse.
Betsy and I both emphasize position a lot, whether we ride with someone who's train with someone who's an Olympic rider, a world-class rider, or someone riding any level. Position, because it affects the horse in the way Betsy was speaking of, is so important. It's so important to ride the corners. When you're training Prix St. George and up, and especially Grand Prix, the only place that you have to get ready for anything is the corners. And again, testing the half halts. We need to test the half halts. We need to test the weight and the range. We need to see how much the horse is willing in a light contact with a light leg pressure. This maintains the quality of the canter. That is how we're going to know that all through the canter, we are in fact going to have what we need for the pirouette. A question we have here is, how important is long lining and why do you use it? I am presently under contract from Trafalgar Press and writing a book on long lining. It is something I really enjoy doing and I think is a very important part of horse mastership for trainers to learn to do. I have to say that there are Olympic medal horses that never longlined. It's entirely possible to train well to Grand Prix a horse who's never longlined, but longlining is a tremendous asset to have in your toolkit as a trainer. And it's not that hard to learn to do at all. That's what the book's about. And it's another relationship with your horse. It's one that is separate from the riding. So if I were to just simplify why I think it's important, it's because the reins in the long lines are the reins. Your whip, which is a timing wand, it should never be used harshly with the horse, but it's a timing wand. That is used as the legs and seat of the horse to get the horse to come forward to the bit and learn a contact without weight on his body. So for horses that are not easy in the contact, long lining can be a tremendous help. It is not just for training Piaf Passage. It is a means to an end for that, but it's to train contact. And with long lining, the horse is simply in his own balance, depending on how you place him according to the size half halts you use with him to make the difference. And when we look at the collective marks in the riding, and it talks about submission, acceptance of the bridle, etc., so many horses, I'm an S judge, so many times I think it would really help if this horse had some experience with the long lining or the rider did. It's a separate relationship where you get to see how their body moves. Many of you like to learn about biomechanics and see how the horse's body moves. It's an entirely separate relationship because they get to experience you a different way and you get to experience them a different way, which trains your mind's eye when you're on your horse to know what he's actually doing. Okay, instead of just to be looking in the mirror, you can see things in his body and feel things that will really enable you to train him in all of the different things. One other quick thing on long lining is that just as we do evaluations when we are training horses in the riding process, you train what you learn in long lining is to evaluate your horse in terms of his audio reactions, his visual reactions, and his tactile reactions. I won't go on into all that because it would get too long in answer to the question, but there is a direct correlation to riding and long lining and how it really works with the training scale, and that's what my book is about. But because you really can train the things that you want more under saddle by having the long line to help you. And you can start young with a horse. You can start with a horse when they're a very young horse, 3 years old.
Okay, I have a question here. How do you help people come to terms with limited physical ability? Parentheses, talent. My journey in all of my dressage career has been finding cross-training, and cross-training that really works. To me, Pilates is really such an answer to so many things. Pilates is the kind of movement that you use when you're riding. The reformer, I think, is even better than mat work. Anything you do is great. Or like a ball, something balancing on the ball. But the reformer has movement to it. So when you're working with the reformer, it has similarities to a horse. So to answer the question, I do a lot of work with riders on the ground, a lot of unmounted exercises. I've developed a system called Equilates, which is the equestrian and Pilates together. And we've had a lot of fun with that. We do different things where you either work on the reformer with trainers, or we have a whole different routine on a ball to music, to walk, trot, and canter, which is really fun. And just going around using the ball. And people then start to think that they have different limitations and find out maybe they don't. And that opens the door. I think sometimes also, too, having worked with some para riders, there really are some limitations. And there are some things that an individual really can't do. I had one wonderful young lady last year who had really no feeling in the left side of her body. And she was amazing in the things she did. But it really made me have to think quite differently, because it was, how do we balance someone who can't feel here? So it made me think a lot. Many times I'll work with a physical therapist to see if a person has some issue that the physical therapist can help them through. For me, if a person will spend time off the horse and do sports-specific exercises, it really, really is a help. And then you can, what you think is maybe a limit is no longer a limit. So to me, I think anything's possible if you put your mind to it.
I agree. Good answer. Here is another question, which I think is a very good question. With a horse with no dressage training, at what point do you introduce the half halt? This is a great question. I was fortunate to have a wonderful pony club leader, and I was a dorky little pony clubber. And in our pony club, horses that were donated to our pony club, because none of us had much money to buy a horse, and she was a super trainer herself. Her name is Jan Conant. She's one of my mentors from Glastonbury, Connecticut. And I'm so grateful to her. And she would, George Morris would come and teach us clinics when we were 11, and so would Jessica Ranshausen. I guess they had nothing else to do at that time. So I was going to say, but they taught us, and they were incredible. And he, to answer the question about half halt, I think that half halt and the beauty of what it is as a foundation aid in our dressage is also pertinent to any horse in other fields. Because what it's doing is, a half halt is helping to balance the horse. And any particular discipline, whether it's hunters or jumping, half halts are very pertinent because, you know, the jumpers spend a lot of time on flat work. They don't jump as often as they do flat work. Half halt, we know what it is. It is basically, I wrote a book, I think it was 15 years ago, on interviewing different trainers and what half halts are, and 8 of them wanted to answer that one out of 15. You see the Jane Savoy tapes and all that are very good in that. But a half halt is essentially, in balancing the horse, it's, I think of it as a 4-step process, a combination use of your lower back seat and leg to bring the horse forward to the bit, where hopefully he wants to go because the bit is a nice place to be. You then close in both hands, soften. You may use one hand more than the other. Soften and then ride the horse forward again. It's a very swing sort of motion. It's like breathing, inhale and exhale. And a lot of people stop half halting when they come to step two and the horse's head comes above the bit and they don't soften and then ride the horse forward again. So it's important to do that. The four questions that I find that people most ask about half halts are, how long should it be? How strong should it be? How often should I do it and when? And that is what feel is, getting experience and feel to know what to do that. And that is something very much that we will be working on in the clinics, is to know that aspect of that. So to answer this question simply, it's a good thing to ride with at any horse.
I have a question here. Having trouble teaching ones, my body seems stuck in the rhythm of twos. Have gotten threes, but no more. I'm also teaching my horse simultaneously, which is probably part of my difficulty, which I would say that it's very difficult to teach a horse and yourself ones. If you have the opportunity to ride a horse that knows ones, that will make your life much easier. If you don't have the opportunity, it's still a possibility. So here I'm seeing that my body seems stuck in the rhythm of twos. I've gotten three ones, okay, but no more. Okay, so that's very interesting and a very, very common issue or challenge that I think all of us can face with certain horses. The rhythm of the ones is almost a different rhythm for the horse. The rhythm of the twos, they have a bum, dun, 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 and in the ones, it's just that skipping. What happens is the rider generally tenses up after the first few and tells the horse to stop. Interesting, when I was at Herbert Rabine's, one of the guys in the neighborhood came, and he was this big, big, very tall guy and had a very big horse. And he came in and he said, "Herbert, all I want to do is do the ones." He said, "I'm asking for Christmas, for Valentine's Day. I just want the ones." And Herbert said, "Well, tell me what he does." And he said, I can't get more than seven. He does seven and he stops. And Herbert's sitting there and he said, "Okay, show me." And sure enough, the first time he got five. Then he got seven. And Herbert walked over and he gets on him in half-long reins, picks up the canter, collects the reins as the horse, well, the horse was already collecting when he sat on him. And he went across the diagonal, just cantered down alongside, short side, across the diagonal. I'm sitting here on the bench watching 21 ones. And I'm like this, and the guy's going, "Can you believe that?" And he goes down the long side again, 23 ones. He drops the reins, and he said, "He can do them." Like that. So the young man then took the horse and went home, and I think got him on his own. And I said to Herbert, "How did you do that?" And he said, "Well, didn't you hear what he said?" And I said, he said he could do seven, and he said, "Exactly." And he said his mind stopped at seven. His mind, he said, "I can do seven," and his body didn't keep asking. And he said, "The horse knows how to do them. If he can do seven, he can do a lot." So he said, I never thought he would stop. And then I said, "That was amazing." And he said, but did you see? I only did it two times." He said, "Two times you can take him by surprise. Three times you have to train him." So I don't know if that answered your question, but but I think that another thing too is for the ones, like a lot of times I'll have a student skip and just continue to skip, and I'll take them off the horse, have them skip across the diagonal, down the long side, and have that rhythm of the skipping like that, moving every stride, or even just in walk, swinging the legs, and not try too much through the body. I think when a rider tries too much, then we do get stuck, and the horse doesn't hear that clear connection.
Can you address spurs with a young horse? Yes spurs, no spurs. This is a good question, and I think it resonates through not just with young horses, but even training on. Remember that the whip amplifies and the spur refines. So there are times that you have to make judgment values and when you're going to use the whip and when you're going to use the spur. And neither should ever be overused. And when in the beginning with a young horse, both to leg yield him away or to go forward, it's a good idea to train him with the whip and use the whip as what I call a timing wand. Sometimes it's very appropriate to have spurs on a young horse who doesn't understand how to move sideways. And then you make a choice of what design you choose. There are so many. There are the little rubber plastic ones that roll, and those are very easy light spurs. And also then you can go on up to longer spurs depending on the shape of the barrel, not necessarily to be stricter with the horse. I think it's important also to use the spur correctly. And what I notice is sometimes people will keep moving the leg further and further back as they use it. In other words, it should be used here close to the girth, but if the horse doesn't listen, don't think he'll hear it louder if you move further and further back. What he'll learn is that the fifth time you use it means to go forward. So spurs can be very appropriate for young horses, and we should never think that we shouldn't do it just because they're young. They just need to be used the right way. Same in training Piaf and working in the FEI levels. I encourage my riders very often to ride with no spurs and to start twice a week, at least starting with no spurs, so that they really keep the feel of how forward to the leg is the state of mind their horse is. And this is very important for keeping the dynamic action and engagement of the hind legs of the horse forward to the bit, because engagement is two things. One is getting the horse to weight the hind end, and the second is to maintain the power to bring him forward. I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. Here's one. When people say more leg, what exactly does that mean? What part of the leg? What is the best way for a lower level rider to learn to use her hands less? Super questions. I see the seat as really like the core of the body, like the innermost part of your body has to have positive strength. And to use the seat is first like an engagement of bringing your seat bones forward, then a little kick of the lower leg, and then a direction through the upper leg. Mm-hmm. So you sort of channel the energy of the horse toward the hand. Then if the hands can be placed in front of you, no tension back towards your body with the reins, but pushing that energy up into that contact of the rein, then it's an effective use of the leg. This is it's a deep question and an excellent one. And I think that will really be able to address more in the actual clinics themselves, mm-hmm. because then you can see, have an action and really do that in action.
And our thanks again to Kathy and Betsy for that presentation. Find more information about the education opportunities at the USDF by visiting the website at usdf.org and checking the USDF Continuing Education Calendar. And whilst you're on the website, be sure to visit eTrack, the USDF's educational resource. Check the April issue of the USDF Connections magazine for the article on Laura Spicer, entitled Dressage Pro Triathlon Amateur. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone podcast app or to the Podbean or Stitcher apps that are also available for download to your smartphone or tablet. And that's it for this week's episode. Our thanks again to our guests, Laura Spicer, Betsy Steiner, and Kathy Connolly. Until next week, thank you for listening.